There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
Know you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go. Qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Steve Fald, my co-host. Nasser Hamid will be bringing us Motorsports Mondial in the second part of the show. This is podcast number 515, July 14th, 2011. Stephen?
This F1Weekly podcast is brought to you by the donation button. Look at it on the front page of the F1Weekly website. Click on it. Make a donation. You know, you want to.
Thank you, Stephen. On today's program, happy Bastille Day to everyone. Vive la France. Perez and Bianchi to fight it out in a Ferrari. Hamilton says he may be getting burnt out. And of course, Motorsports Mondial with the King of Karachi. And we have a special, fresh off the presses, interview with World Series by Renault 3.5 driver Alexander Rossi. And of course, that's going to be more of a conversation with Nasser Hamid that really, you know, it's the pinnacle of interviews, Stephen.
The pinnacle of conversation.
It's wonderful. So stay tuned for that. I think you're going to enjoy it. Steve, welcome to the studio. How are you?
Wonderful. And yourself, Mr. Rudge?
I'm just outstanding, and I'm really happy to hear that Sergio Perez, who's still part of the Ferrari development program, and Jules Bianchi is as well, and they're going to duke it out in a Ferrari, I believe, in September.
For Felipe Massa's seat?
Felipe Massa's panties. But I doubt if it's for... I would be impressed if it was for Felipe Massa's seat. It'd be nice to see some fresh blood at Ferrari to learn from El Maestro.
Yeah. Well, ultimately, it comes down to... The way things are going in F1 right now, it's like almost very difficult to crack the driver ceiling unless you've got a big wad of cash in your back pocket.
I agree, and I think Jean Todt's been trying to kill the ban on testing, but then some of the smaller teams are protesting that because of costs, but still, nevertheless...
Just because the ban is lifted doesn't mean you have to test.
Exactly, so it is a bit of a conundrum, and I certainly am for as much testing as possible. As far as I'm concerned, because we get better racing, better excitement, and we'll leave it at that. But still, that should be an interesting duel, to say the least.
It should be fun to watch.
I wish it would be fun to watch, but I don't think it's going to be televised.
Ferrari could make some pay-per-view money.
That's true. Wouldn't be surprised. But we'll see. Of course, the whole Team Orders thing was blown out of proportion. I think they're making a mountain out of a hill of beans. And, you know, I mean, I know it's a slow news week, but come on. I think Horner was right in calling the shots. And on the other hand, I think Mark Webber, to ignore them, was right as well as a driver. Each one has their prospective job in the team. And as a driver, you have to compete and you have to fight.
You got to push until the end. You never know. What was it? 2 years ago in Sepang, second to last lap, one of the Ferraris died on the track. You know, you never know when someone's motor is going to go biffed.
I agree. So
they're going to run out of gas.
Yeah, and to be honest with you, I think the media goes into a frenzy over this more than anybody else. I don't even think the fans really were that perturbed by the whole thing.
No, it ultimately, you know, hold your gap. Ultimately, maybe, you know, that could be something around the car was overheating because it was not getting any clean air.
Very good, Stephen. You know, but I think it's great. And of course, Dietrich Mateschitz says that he has no doubt that Mark Webber will stay at Red Bull for his entire Formula One career, basically.
Or remainder thereof.
Well, I mean, let's face it. Why would you leave the fastest car, world championship team, and a big check to go where?
Right, exactly.
To be a number two to Fernando or something?
Yeah, or, you know, go to another team on the grid, Williams Mercedes, and maybe hope that they get it together?
The only team that makes sense would be Mark Webber to team up with Robert Kubica at Renault. But right now, Renault is not doing that well. They're having issues. I don't even like their driver lineup. And now they're going back to a rearward exhaust, as we spoke about in the previous podcast.
Right.
So right now, Mark Webber's got no opportunities, really, but to stick with Red Bull where he's happy.
Exactly. Stay at Red Bull where you get a car that you can win races in, you can get poles in, that you're going to be at the tip of the spear. It really makes no sense for him. You know, if Red Bull's willing to have him, stay.
I agree, because there's nowhere to go even if you don't take a paycheck. There really is nowhere to go. I mean, look at Williams. They're keeping Rubinho.
Yeah, exactly.
So, and I certainly don't see him going back to Williams, even though they'll be powered by Renault soon.
You know, Flavio's telling Mark to stay where he's at because that's where he's going to get his biggest check. It's where he's got the best chance to win races and even possibly a championship. You never know, you know, Sebastian Vettel could have, you know, his junior year swoon and a bad year next year.
We've only had 9 races. It's not over yet.
Exactly. So, or next year, you could be the hot one out of the chute.
Thank you, Steven. And I could be the co-host next year. You never know what's going to happen in this business.
So DC's going to come in and take over? It's going to be the co-host?
Yeah. Wouldn't surprise me. He's pretty sneaky, you know. But anyway, Mateschitz says that this will happen for sure. He is very popular with the team. He feels very comfortable. And it is an excellent relationship. He knows this and we know it. To be honest, Mark has no better choice than the fastest car. And we have no better choice for a fast driver. And you know what? He is absolutely right.
Right. There's really no one else that's going to be available.
It's a non-issue.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Let's move on to Renault. I can't wait to hear their rearward exhaust, because the front exhaust sounds funky.
Yeah, it was really kind of weird sometimes.
It was strange, but still.
But I like the way it catches fire.
That's fun, but still. Well, it was also a cigarette lighter.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Yeah, exactly. Don't forget these things, Steven. But team principal Eric Boullier now is talking about Robert Kubica more, and he says he'll be back to a race seat. As soon as he's recovered from his injuries. And Nick Heidfeld knows that, and Nick Heidfeld will step aside as soon as Robert is prepared to get in the car, and they're talking about this season, possibly.
You know, I haven't really heard any details on where Robert Kubica is. Yeah, where Robert Kubica's rehabilitation's at, but I really wouldn't be that surprised if he is back in the car by the end of the year. Though I would think that it might be better, considering the severity of his injuries, to, you know, wait till next season to really get started.
Well, to be honest with you, I disagree. As soon as he's ready, get him in the car. Let's get the development going for next year. Because if they want to be competitive next year, they need to do it this year. Because I'm sure, after Germany, you have to start focusing on 2012.
Yeah, they have, or the...
I mean, the big picture, Steven, is the championship. Remember Fisichella, Fernando?
What? When was that?
That was a long time ago.
It sure feels that way, doesn't it?
But we're going back very soon. Trust me, Steven. I have full confidence in the régie. But I like what Eric Boullier had to say. There is no other possibility. I should know, as I am the man who signed the contract. Robert is improving very quickly after the last surgery. He had to relax for some time, but now he is pushing really hard. And Heidfeld knows all about it. So there you have it. I like that. It's good news, and we've got to get Robert back in the car. Formula One needs Robert Kubica. We need that skill level that's lacking right now. That's my personal opinion, of course, Steven.
Of course.
We're going to India at the end of the year for Formula One, which is going to be interesting. I haven't even seen any pictures of this
track. Did they make that December date? I thought they were still in their old slot.
I'm not sure, but we'll see what happens. I think the lack of Bahrain moved things around a little bit. but I haven't checked the schedule recently. But speaking of the Indian Grand Prix, Karun Chandhok and Narain Karthikeyan are all over Mallya's Boutte. Apparently, they've been criticizing him for not having an Indian driver in Formula One. And I love what Mallya has to say. He's asserted that he shouldn't be lambasted for not running an Indian driver.
Just because he's got an Indian team.
And, well, he says that Chandhok and Karthikeyan are just not high enough of quality. They don't...
No, they don't deserve a race, necessarily deserve a race seat.
Well, you know, Chandhok is a nice guy. And I wish, you know, I wish he would get a race seat. But in the end, if these guys were good enough, one wouldn't have been replaced by Ricciardo in Silverstone. And I can't even believe that Narain Karthikeyan is still in Formula One.
And just to clarify, the Indian Grand Prix is the last weekend in October.
Thank you, Stephen. Right the day, what day? Halloween?
Day before.
Thank you. Oh, my wife's birthday.
28th and 30th.
That's beautiful, Stephen. Absolutely outstanding. But there you have it. Criticizing Mallya is not going to get you anything.
No, basically, they pretty much guaranteed themselves not getting a seat at Force India by, you know, criticizing, you know, get someone else to criticize Mallya. Don't do it yourself.
I totally agree. I don't even, it's just almost, it's completely destructive and unconstructive. I mean, they're not going to get a seat. It's not going to happen. Also, you know, and HRT hasn't made an announcement whether Ricciardo will race again. Apparently, he got a lot of accolades from Vitantonio Liuzzi, your friend, on his professionalism, the fact that he finished the race, didn't bang wheels, and didn't cause a lot of trouble.
Yeah, exactly. You know, basically get the car home without dinging it up at any point during the weekend, which is pretty good considering some of the conditions that they ran under this weekend. Would have been really easy to put one into the tire barrier.
Yep, I agree. And Force India has already been talking about hanging on to Paul DeRista for 2012. I know it's a little early in the...
But it would be a good... You know, he's obviously a quality driver. He's...
Good head on his shoulders. Yeah. Mature.
And he's basically at or better than Sutil's been so far this season.
So, yes. And unfortunately...
But isn't he the cousin of...
He is. Of Bob.
Bob Franchitti.
Yeah. But what's sort of not interesting is the fact that a lot of these teams, once again, will be signing the same drivers for 2012. That's why I'm really hoping Robert Kubica comes back. I really hope that Jarno truly retires. And, you know, I don't carry any ill will towards anybody. All these guys are great. I'm just looking at it as a team, you know, as a sport and as a fan and watching it, you know. I mean, Felipe Massa's been a Ferrari for a while now.
Yep.
Maybe it's time to step back. Take Luca Badoer's spot. Relax a little bit.
Because I would like to see some more fresh blood. You know, it seems like a lot of the drivers are really long in the tooth and have been around forever, and it just doesn't sound like Formula One.
I agree. And to be honest with you, I mean, I know Rubinho really doesn't want to retire, but I'm surprised Patrick Head and Frank are going for this.
Well, he's still competitive. He's coming relatively cheap, and the experience that he can bring is pretty extensive. You know, I've driven in more races than anybody.
Yeah, but don't forget, the inexperience that Kimi Raikkonen brought to Formula One was what made him shine.
Well, a lot of times with a young guy coming in, the reason they excel is because they don't know what they can't do.
Exactly. Sometimes too much knowledge will burden you, Stephen. It happens to me all the time.
Yeah, exactly. You know, Rubinho hasn't really shown that he's... that he should have a race seat.
I agree. So we'll see what happens. We do have Germany coming up, which is going to be interesting because now we're back to off-throttle... blown diffusers.
Which didn't seem to make a whole lot of difference in last week.
I think it made a little bit of a difference. I saw some defense. I think it certainly hurt Renault.
Yeah.
I think it held Vettel back a little bit. And obviously Ferrari looked great.
Right. So what is that going to do for
Ferrari? So are they going to stay... Is Ferrari going to take a step back in Germany?
True.
And so it's going to...
Well, the other team that... Actually, the other team that kind of took a hit was McLaren.
Well, McLaren looked great in race trim.
But otherwise, they were kind of slow. And even in race trim, they were...
But if they didn't have the problems, and if Jenson Button didn't have that problematic pit stop, I think he would have finished well.
Oh, he would have. Probably top five.
Yeah, so I certainly would never underestimate McLaren, even though, of course, they're saying, you know, they've got to regroup and...
Get the guy a new calculator so he can calculate the right amount of fuel.
Yes, I think that is, especially for a top team. I mean, I expect Virgin to have the wrong amount of fuel in the car.
What the wrong size gas tank.
Yeah, I mean, that's part of the learning curve. But for a team like McLaren to be doing that, it's a little out there. At Silverstone.
Well, not only that, but you would think that a team with that kind of history would have in place a check and balance system where engineer X goes, okay, we need X number of gallons of fuel, and another engineer goes and runs the calculations again to make sure that that number's right.
Well, it depends on what you're doing, too. I think they thought that they were going to be saving a certain amount of fuel with the off-throttle ban, Stephen.
Well, that too, and I also think that they expected it to not be as quick a race because they didn't think the track was going to dry out as quickly. You don't burn as much fuel when you're racing in the rain because you're not going as fast.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, for keeping an open mind.
And they probably were hoping, expecting at least some cautions. Well, we had a couple of course yellows, but no full course.
Which
anything.
Is not surprising. But still, it's going to be very interesting to see if Ferrari can hold on to what they have been able to bring at Silverstone. Certainly, it was a historical win in terms of Formula One, Ferrari, and their involvement in the championship. And I was glad that Ferrari was able to bring it.
Well, it was nice for them to do it on their 60th anniversary.
Absolutely. I thought it was just absolutely mind-blowing. Yeah. But still, what happens in Germany, once again, is going to be super exciting to see what's going to happen to Ferrari, McLaren, and Red Bull.
Which track are we at this year?
Nürburgring, Stephen.
Okay.
So it's going to be very fun. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. We've got an outstanding Alexander Rossi interview, and we're talking fresh off the presses. This is so fresh. It's just, that's what makes it fun. And, of course, Motorsports Mondial with the Swami himself. So we'll be back after this brief message from Bell Auto Care.
Do you own a European or Japanese vehicle and live in the New York tri-state area? Then I want to tell you about Bell Auto Care. Bell Auto Care is a Bosch authorized repair shop with over 35 years of dedication in providing honest, friendly, and up-to-date repair and preventative maintenance to vehicles like yours and mine. Not only is this the shop in the New York area to take your European or Japanese car, they are F1 and MotoGP enthusiasts as well. So go to bellautocare.com to check out their special deals, F1 and MotoGP news, or for more information, and ring their bell to care for your car.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the Swami, the guru himself, Nasser Hamid.
Greetings and racing regards from Nando, musical regards from Julio. The Reds are coming, they are armed and dangerous. Dijon Prenois, 1979 in GP2. In GP3, 8 races, 8 different winners. Looks like nobody wants to win the championship. Plus, we have sports car action from Lime Rock to Laguna Seca. And Kentucky rain keeps coming down. Another day, another town. NASCAR rolls around. Have you heard the brouhaha about the parking situation there?
I heard a lot of things, including Greg Biffle getting a new team manager.
Well, that's very good. About time. We shall begin with the British Grand Prix at the new and Bernie-approved Silverstone. Did you like the track, sir?
Outstanding.
Very good. I really liked that cable cam. That was fantastic. First win of the season for Ferrari and Fernando Alonso, where it all began 60 years ago. As Mr. Morrison used to sing, "Give this man a ride, sweet memory will die." And thanks to Red Bull pit stop screw up, Nando was a rider on the storm. Very impressive 27th win of the career for Muy Macho Hombre from Oviedo. Victory puts him 5th on the all-time win list, sharing the spot with Sir Jackie Stewart. This is something very, very impressive. Kid just started racing in 2001, and he's gone through hell to be where he is today, if you know what I mean.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, those two lean years at Renault.
Yeah, but he had two great years at Renault, too.
Yeah, but I mean,
cycles, man. So you can't be on top all the time.
Plus, there was a year which, as Mr. Brazier found out, he went to this McLaren location office.
And there's
no trace of him.
So maybe he wasn't there after all.
Yeah, there was a yellow sticky there saying he was never here.
Yeah, I think it was just like the moonwalk. It was all made up in Hollywood.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. Okay. And what a day for Scuderia Ferrari, winning on home ground of their rivals and where it all started for Enzo in 1951. And we discuss more of this in the Sunday show. Sebastian Vettel, second best on Sunday, and two other times this season has been his worst result, which is really very impressive. The youngest world champion extends his lead in the championship, and it will be very, very surprising if he is to lose it.
It'd be pretty hard.
Yeah, but he knows what happened last year. Petrov still is racing. Mark Webber was also on the podium, but not a happy camper. Time and circumstances have made him Barrichello of Red Bull or the DC at McLaren. Problem is not team orders, but teammates.
Shocking.
Yeah, Jos Verstappen knows the feeling. Gerhard Berger knows the feeling. You know what I'm talking about?
I do know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Barrichello played second banana to Herr Schumacher, and DC could have been a contender if McLaren had exercised their option on the services of Nick Heidfeld instead of going for the ice cream man. That was another lost opportunity. If only Red Bull, you know, let's say F1 is if the other way around. If only Red Bull had put Bordeaux or Buemi as teammate to Mark Webber, things could have been very different. Or even Scott Speed or Antonio Liuzzi. Bastian is the golden boy. It is interesting that Red Bull would not employ team orders last year when Mark sure could have used some help and had a big lead in the championship, but past Sunday, maintain position was their mantra. So it's not pretty obvious what Das agenda there is.
It's hell, Vettel.
Yes. Hamilton and Massa fought like championship was at stake for fourth place. Good thing Stewart stayed out of this. Because this is motor racing that we all love so much. Pure racing, no artificial ingredients added. And there is no sell-by date on such memorable moments as we remember Dijon 79 and the Hungaroring.
So deep and profound.
1986. Oh, absolutely. It's just such a joy to watch these moments, you know, even 20, 30 years later. I mean, I remember when I was doing an interview, brief interview with Martin Brundle, and Mr. Brazier was there too. Well, I was there courtesy of him. And the moment I mentioned to him that Formula 3 is where I started following your career and the great battle you had with Senna. And, you know, right away it hit him also.
Tears of joy.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it was machismo. Massa now goes to the race. Please pay attention, Mr. Rogers. Massa now goes to the race where he almost won last year. Then came the memo. I don't know if it was just a memo or was a text message on the dashboard. Massa, the man who almost won the 2008 World Championship, is still looking for his first win since Alonso became his teammate. And you know what I was thinking the other day? I was driving home from work. And, you know, I was thinking about Massa and Alonso's situation, the Kovalainen, Hamilton. You know, there's not much difference between a very good driver and a great driver. But what happened with a great driver, Alonso gets one sniff of a victory, he grabs it. Did the same thing in Japan some years ago, if you recall. And also that famous Nürburgring win over Massa, unfortunately, at that time. You know, it's the same. You've seen it with Schumacher. We've seen it with other drivers. And that's, I think, it's a very minute difference. But that's what makes a difference. Not that Alonso and Button are bad drivers, but it's just that a couple of creme de la creme that is hard to beat. Any thoughts on that, sir?
Oh, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, I really feel bad for Felipe Massa, but he had no choice, and I'm sure that he had some deep thoughts when he found out that Fernando Alonso was going to be his teammate. And I think pretty much that a world championship is completely out of his grasp now.
Yeah, I mean, poor thing has gone from Michael Schumacher as teammate, then Kimi Raikkonen, then Fernando Alonso. Maybe they should bring in Sebastian Vettel next.
That'll make his day.
Yeah, Lewis Hamilton.
Oh, yeah. Lewis Hamilton. Okay, seventh in the... we're up to Pretty Boy Floyd of F1, Nico Rosberg. He was sixth and is set to re-sign with Mercedes. Second year in a row, he has Michael Schumacher's number. Schumacher is beginning to remind me of Graham Hill racing in his own Embassy Hill. Sadly, no diplomatic immunity or privileges in Formula One. And I think if they get a car that as competitive, even more competitive than Red Bull is today, probably Nico Rosberg will have the upper hand still. And that will look really bad.
Yeah, I agree. And Mercedes might really look good at their home Grand Prix for the next race. And apparently, their new exhaust system seems to be working pretty good. So, Nico could get in the top four this time.
Yeah, we'll see. Seventh in the British Grand Prix is the surprise of the year. And we were talking about this as the palatial studio was being in the green room, as I should say. But this is really the surprise for me. Sergio Perez, and I'm glad it is a pleasant surprise. Most of the time when young guys come in, it's a unpleasant surprise, just as Romain Grosjean and so many others. There was a time when Sergio raced in British F3, and this was the year when Jaime Alguersuari won the championship, and he was a rookie. And he did not put in performances, he won races, but he did not put in performances like Alguersuari did, or Ricciardo did after him, or Jean-Eric won. They all won the British F3 championship, but has done very well so far this season to justify his place at Sauber. As part of Telmex-sponsored drivers, his seat should be safe for next year. Your thoughts on Mr. Senior Perez from Guadalajara?
Unbelievable. Shocking. I thought he would fall on his face, and he's done the complete opposite.
Yeah, I really thought with all the hoopla behind Esteban Gutierrez, who is the reserve driver, that sooner or later Esteban will step in.
And he's the Mexican I was focused on.
Yeah.
And this really threw me really off kilter, because I didn't know his history very well and certainly didn't expect him to perform as well as he's done.
No, he has been very good, very good.
And he's doing a great job as a teammate to Kamui Kobayashi.
Yeah. Talking of Ricciardo, the Australian from Perth made his Grand Prix debut and stayed below the radar, which is very good in a lot of ways, but did finish the race. It was a low-key debut, but many great champions have made similar debuts. Now, time will tell in a few races where he really stands again with Antonio Liuzzi, who was Ricciardo of his day in 2004 when he was dominating the Formula 3000 Championship, or whatever that series was called in those days. I think he had won the first six races.
Correct.
And I was at the race when he won at Imola in 2004. But you know what? Interestingly, one day I was going through some old issues of F1 magazine, and there is a big 2 or 3 page article how Jean Todt, as Ferrari manager, has beaten all the other team managers and signed with Antonio Liuzzi. And it goes on to say, expect him to make his debut for Ferrari alongside Schumacher. Ricardo Patrese also once signed a contract like that, but he has no idea what happened. Welcome to Formula One.
You got him a drive at Toro Rosso because they had the Ferrari engines.
There you go. As he being Liuzzi and few others found out, bulls get slaughtered not only on Wall Street in Manhattan, but also in Milton Keynes. And we wish all the drivers all the best. It will be interesting to see what they do with Jean-Eric Wern and Ricciardo as season. I mean, between Alguersuari and Buemi, you know, they've already, to keep them for the third year, it doesn't really make much sense. When both of them are just doing, I mean, they're doing as good as the other.
I agree completely. Yeah, and the car shows that it can be competitive in the right hands at the right time.
Yeah, and what's going to happen, you know, It's just like when they put Sebastian Vettel in place of, you know, Liu Zi and Speed, look where he is. Same thing can happen with Jean-Eric Wurne, you know. So we'll see. And I believe you mentioned this in September, Ferrari will test Jules Bianchi and Sergio Perez at Fiorano and Mugello. So I was talking, actually chatting with Jules Bianchi's personal manager, the, you know, Olivier, and he is very, very excited. And there was a comment from, what I think, from Luca Baldessari or somebody, that they would like to see Jules in Formula One next year. I don't think he'll be at Ferrari, but they can always place him at a different team, you know. And the test will take place either at Fiorano or Mugello. Both are owned by Ferrari. Now we move to support races at the British Grand Prix GP2. Last time it was Happe Dos on the web, and this time it was GP Deutsch, probably Portuguese version that I was able to catch and enjoy. And of course, I enjoyed it as much as whether it's in Portuguese, English, or Francais. My thanks to Mr. Interruptor for posting the link on F1 Weekly Forum. And for those who have not joined the forum, this is new motivation, so you can find out what's happening. It's interesting, you know, how many people on Facebook are trying to get, you know, hey, is there a link for this? Is there a link for that? Very interesting. A wet and dry race and a great battle between Jules Bianchi and German Christian Fittoris. Shades of Dijon Prenois, 79. This time the French driver won. It was very, very good. Swede Marcus Ericsson was third and Romain Grosjean fourth. Grosjean extended his championship lead by winning the sprint race on Sunday. Spaniard Danny Claus was second and Dutchman Guido van der Garde was third. Ericsson was fourth and Bianchi fifth. On Tuesday, it was announced that GP2 Asia will be merged with the main GP2 series. GP2 Asia was dying a slow death upon birth, which was given to fight the threat of the then-new A1GP series. You remember that. And that series was on life support ever since Sheikh Makhloum Al Makhloum from Dubai bailed out after starting the series in 2005. And Moa was at the very first A1GP race at Brands Hatch. Winning both races that weekend was a star in the making who was sure to make an impact in his racing career given his pedigree and talent, Nelson Piquet Jr. And now he's still making impact, but not in the way we thought, but now going into... I was watching a little bit of the NASCAR truck race, or maybe it was some highlights, and his name popped up. So how things can change. When you go from racing from Monte Carlo to mile-long Martinsville, something has gone wrong. That confirms there is a God somewhere. So if you misbehave, this is what will happen to you. From GP2 to GP3, much was expected. GP3 is turning out to be a very, not the series, but the performance of drivers, very disappointing. Much was expected from second-year drivers and new experienced talent like Valtteri Bottas of Finlandia. But after 8 races, we have 8 different winners. What does that tell you? All of them are like the next Sebastian Vettels now?
No, there's something wrong. They need to shake it up. They need to seriously look at this series and see why it's not bringing up the talent. Why is the cream not rising to the top?
No, most of the talent in young level is going to this series. That's what the problem Formula 3 is having. Felipe Nasr is not here, and a couple of good drivers. They have a good driver, but some, maybe all of them are very good. But that's hard to believe that 30 drivers in a series are very good. But start of race 1 was like the start of the famous historic 2005 US Grand Prix. Of the 30 cars on the warm-up lap, 19 cars came into the pit to change to wet tires. Nico Müller from Switzerland started from 6th on the grid and did not pit after the warm-up lap and went on to finish to win his first race of the season. Last year he was 3rd in the championship. Last year he was very impressive, finished ahead of Alexander Rossi and was one of the preseason favorites this year. British drivers occupied the next 7 slots behind Müller. Alexander Sims, who used to race in F3 Euro Series, was 2nd. Nick Jaloli was 3rd. Pole sitter Adrian Quaife Hobbs was 4th. Connor Daly, only American in the race, was 15th. Daniel Murad, only Canadian, was one of 3 drivers out on the opening lap. Race 2, maiden win for Lewis Williamson of Scotland, and this kid is now on my radar. I think this guy is very good talent. Over fellow Brits, Dean Smith and Alexander Sims. Rio Haryanto of Indonesia was 4th. He won a race last year and is one of many second-year drivers yet to win a race this season. Australian V8 might. Garth Tender, winner in race 1 over Jamie Wincup. Race 2 was another 1-2 for Holden, which is a GM subsidiary in Land Down Under. Wincup winning over Craig Lowndes. You know, I was thinking yesterday, Mr. Rogers, 2012 would be 30 years to my very first race I attended, Formula 1, Autodromo at Cinale di Monza. And that has just... 1982, wow. Mario Andretti on pole position. And that was all the motivation I needed to go to Monza next year.
I think you should.
I love that place. I love the history.
There's going to have to be a new Cafe Nasser.
Mm-hmm. I don't know about that, but that's it's on the agenda now, on the radar.
Maybe I'll go with you, Nasser.
Yeah, you're welcome. Okay, IndyCar action and mayhem. Did anybody watch any of this?
I decided to skip the whole thing, to be honest with you, but I heard it was pretty exciting.
Oh, it's caution after caution.
Caution after caution?
Yeah, IndyCar action and mayhem from Toronto. Crash Fest won by Dario Franchitti, and he is related to somebody in Formula One, I believe?
He's related to some guy, but I don't know.
Okay.
I don't think it's worth mentioning.
Yeah, just watch Speed TV next time and you will know.
They mention it enough.
Yeah. And Franchitti won over Ganassi teammate Scott Dixon. Ryan Hunter-Reay from Florida was third, and he's now married to the sister of Robbie Gordon, so good for them. Will Power is a little pissed off at Ashley's Ace of Speed for taking him out and leaving him not behind, not only in the race, but also the championship chase. American Le Mans at Lime Rock in beautiful northern part of Connecticut. I've been to this track a couple of times. Very, very nice. Small track, but beautiful location. Race was won by Chris Dyson and Guy Smith in a Mazda-powered Lola. Grand Am at Laguna Seca. I was there on Saturday, and due to time constraint, I did only two interviews, but they are good interviews. One with young Ricky Taylor, son of Wayne Taylor, who was originally from South Africa, used to race in Grand Am, now owns the team. And with Max Angelelli, who has been racing and winning in Grand Am for a while, and he talks about the day when he was F1 safety car driver in 1994 at Imola.
Fascinating.
That's a pretty heavy dose of conversation. Yeah. The race at Laguna Seca was won by California Kids, Alex Gurney from Newport Beach in SoCal, and John Fogarty from Palo Alto in NorCal, and another NorCal kid, he's a middle-aged guy now, Scott Pruitt was leading, but he then overshot his pit. These things happen. Last but not the least, Lynn S. Carr. First Cup race at Kentucky had many fans feeling deep-fried as they were stuck in traffic for a long time. It was finger-licking good for Kyle Busch. He won from pole position. David Ruderman was second in another Toyota. Jimmy Johnson was third in his Hendrick Chevy. Montoya was 15th, and Mr. Rogers, your favorite, Greg Biffle, was 21st. No wonder he needs a new manager. In the chase to the chase, Kyle Busch leads with 624 points. Cousin Carl Edwards is second on 620, and Kevin Harvick third with 614 points. Now, this is where NASCAR really scores big. Carl Edwards is the leading moneymaker this season with earnings of $5.3 million, followed by Kyle Busch on 3.5. And the guy who wins the IndyCar championship, he'll be lucky if he makes, you know, $2 million. And that has to include winning the Indy. So there's a lot of money in NASCAR. Now some F1 Weekly news. Regret to inform the familia this week, we suffered our third in a row access denied. First British F3, they don't give, you know, press credentials to web media, which, you know, we respect the decision, but respectfully disagree. Then NASCAR, and they said, hey, where is our coverage? They listened to a few of our podcasts and probably made the decision right away. And now MotoGP, but we are like a 1999 plus tax Timex watch. We take the licking and keep on ticking. So Moore has taken time off next Friday and will try very hard to get some quality conversation recorded next week at Red Bull MotoGP at Laguna Seca. I have sent out some emails to Ducati and Yamaha requesting, you know, audience with their riders. Sometimes, you know, it's a good thing you're sending earlier. Sometimes it backfires. And sometimes you just show up and ask, Well, I'm hoping if nothing, I can talk to at least Nicky Hayden and Ben Spies, you know. So it should be fun. I'm really looking forward to it. I was at that race some years ago when Rossi and Casey Stoner had a battle, which was like the Dijon of motorcycle, and it's really talked about in motorcycle you know, coverage. So very good to be there. Finally, famous last words. Bahrain Grand Prix rep was at Silverstone and was pointing fingers at other human rights abusing countries where Grand Prix is going on or has gone on. No shortage of countries in that, let me tell you that. As always, Bernie has the last laugh, the last billion, and the last word. This time saying if human rights was the criteria, there would be only two Grand Prix in the world, Switzerland and Belgium. Well, since motor racing is not allowed in Bankville, 20 F1 races at Spa is not a bad idea. Thank you for listening, and smooth sailing, and enjoy your Brussels sprout.
Thank you, Nas, for another outstanding Motorsports Mondial. And of course, now, what everybody's been waiting for, the Alexander Rossi interview.
Yes, sir. First of all, my thanks to Alexander Rossi. He was here. He is here for a short time, so I sent him an email, and he responded very quickly. On a Sunday, this was recorded, so my thanks to him for taking his time, and also to Mr. David Tapia. Yes, you know, he's a very busy person, so he made this possible. And Rossi, of course, won the season opener race at Aragon in World Series by Renault. Right now, he has 101 points, is fourth in the championship. There are three rounds remaining, so, you know, he's going to do what he can to win the championship. Obviously, that's always the goal, but things are looking very good, and people will find out more about what his agenda is and plans are when they listen to it. Thank you.
Okay, folks, on the line from Nevada City, California, is our old friend Alexander Rossi. Alexander, welcome back to F1 Weekly. How are you today, and how long is the stay before you head back to Europa?
Yes, first of all, thank you for having me, and everything's going quite well. We turned back to the U.S. At the beginning of this week, and I'm here for about 3 weeks before I head back overseas.
I was looking at your Facebook page, and it looks like you are getting used to life in Europe. So how much are you accustomed to European ways of doing things?
Yeah, I mean, it's my third full year living in Europe now, so I'm quite adjusted to it at this point. And, you know, I've established friendships and relationships over there. So at the end of the day, California is always my home, but I'm getting more and more comfortable, you know, over there.
And are you fluent in Italian now?
No, but I'm much farther along in the process than I was last year.
Oh, that's very good. Okay, on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being highest or best, how would you rate the season so far in World Series by Renault?
That's a tricky question. Honestly, it's been a 7.
Okay. What has been the surprise for you, or what has been the biggest challenge for you?
You know, there hasn't been any one thing that stuck out in my head. I mean, it's been, after Monza, it was 3 races that we just could not, we didn't score any points for various reasons, and reasons that were more or less out of our control. So at the end of the day, that kind of hurt us quite bad in the championship, but we were very happy with the pace of the car, and the relationship with the team was very good. So there's no reason why we can't, you know, come back fighting, and I think we should have done good with us. So we have 3 more events to pull back car on, and I think it's possible.
Okay, season started in Aragon. This is yet another new track in Spain, which kind of reminds me of Buttonwillow here in California. What is your impression of this circuit?
Yeah, it's quite electric, and obviously we had very good results there with the win and the second place, and it's like any other track, but this one, I mean, you can just really get into a good rhythm with it, and if you have a car that's well balanced, then it's easy to find time. So, you know, I would almost compare it to, you know, almost a Budapest, but with a bit longer straights, because it's very flowing, it's very rhythmic, and it rewards a balanced car.
Okay. Now, you mentioned you had a good weekend. It was just like your GP3 season starter. You won on the opening weekend. Race one, you were on the front row and won the race by over 8 seconds. Tell us a little bit about the race, please.
Yeah, started G2, and I was alongside Robert Wickens at the start, and he made a mistake going into turn one. And I was able to get by him, but then the fourth place and Daniel Mu went into P1. So for the first 13 or 14 laps, I was just trying to find a way around Daniel. And once I did, then it was just about, you know, controlling the race and putting, you know, laps in to open up the gap over Rob. And once we did that, then it was pretty much smooth sailing from there.
A second place in second race gave you the lead in the championship, and this must have been very reassuring to start the season in a new series and a new team. Were you kind of surprised that success came so easily in the opening round, given the serious depth of competition you have this year?
We were always quick in testing, so we went into the first round with the goal of winning the championship. So, yeah, maybe a bit surprised to see the significant results that we did in the opening weekend, but, you know, at the same time, we did know that we had a race-winning car and that the pace was there more or less all the time. So, you know, after the performance and practice and qualifying, we just focused our attention to winning, and we were able to do that.
Okay. Last year, you had a very impressive run with Czech team ISR in Monte Carlo, and I was kind of surprised when you entered the season with Fortec, which is also a very good team. Tell us about the choice of this team, and also, did you look at some other series before confirming your deal in World Series by Renault?
Yeah, we were very close to the deal in GP2 after the strong winter test in Abu Dhabi. But due to budgetary restrictions, that wasn't able to happen. So we went to World Series as, you know, the next best thing below GP2. And at the time, our focus was to ISR, but by the time that we could get our budget completely sorted, ISR had to fill seats, and so they were completely full. So then we kind of shifted our attention to what was left on the table, and Fortec still had 2 seats available, and we had seen in postseason testing that they were quite quick. But having never tested with them, we were a bit apprehensive. But at the end of the day, it was a very good decision, and I'm very happy to be there.
Great. Yeah, Mr. Dutton is quite a character.
Yeah, absolutely. And he had a lot on his plate this year with the multiple championships that he's running. But at the same time, he's doing a good job of keeping the team at a very professional level, and we're winning. We're, you know, fighting for wins in every series, every weekend.
Great. Now you have done some GP2 races. You know, you took part in the GP2 Asia some years ago, and now you've done a few races in World Series by Renault. Apart from the obvious cost difference, what would you say are the strong points of World Series by Renault over GP2, which a young driver should look at when stepping up?
GP2 at the moment has technology that's a bit closer to Formula 1, but that will change next year in 2012 as World Series is coming out with a new car that's going to be much closer to Formula 1 and it's going to rival a GP2 car in terms of ultimate performance. So with that being said, and the added cost bonus you get with World Series, it's going to be an even more viable option next year. But going back to this year, the main differences are the fact that World Series does not run alongside F1, like GP2, and that's part of the reason why the cost is so high. And it's something that is missing in World Series, unfortunately, but at the same time, you're able to do your racing and do your competition in front of a lot of spectators, and hundreds of thousands actually per weekend, because World Series and Renault are able to put on a show that's free for everybody. It attracts a lot of people, which makes finding budget quite a bit easier.
Now, you know, this brings something, a very interesting point for racing fans like me. The fact that they don't race on Grand Prix tracks, GP2 does that really make a big difference for talented drivers like yourself and, you know, some of your competition? One would think that a talented driver would learn a race track very quickly, but obviously that's easier said than done. So is racing at non-F1 tracks really a disadvantage for you and people of your caliber?
No, I don't think so, because honestly, World Series does run on a lot of Formula One types. We just don't do it on Formula One weekend. So we're still getting the same time. For example, we were at Monaco, we were at Evergreen, Monza, Silverstone, Budapest. So a lot of the events are the same, but it's just not on the same time frame.
Okay. Now, in a previous conversation, I'm not sure if it was last year or when you were in Formula Masters, I got the impression, that was just a personal impression, that Eau Rouge did not make an impression on you, as one would expect, maybe because you were in a junior Formula car back then. But now that you've driven a World Series by Renault car, high-performance car, is going through Eau Rouge a lot of fun and all the hype that everybody talks about?
Yeah. I mean, it's always been fun. But like you said, in the smaller car, it's so easy that you don't even think about it. But definitely in World Series, you gotta make sure it's right. And on the first opening laps of a race with heavy fuel and cold tires, it's quite a handful. But yeah, it's a great corner and something that I think every driver looks forward to going to.
Cool. At Monza in race one, your teammate Cesar Ramos was on pole and you were 16th. Is it extra frustrating when your teammate's car is working and you cannot get your car sorted out properly?
Yeah, I mean, that was a special case, to be honest, because we had an actual car failure halfway through the session, so I didn't get to complete a second run on a second set of tires. So it wasn't a true representation, as we were quite quick in practice. So, I mean, yes, it was, of course, frustrating, but at least we knew that that was a justifiable problem, and it wasn't just a lack of pace.
Okay. Monza race 2 saw you finish second and share the podium with Red Bull supported drivers Daniel Ricciardo and Jean-Éric Vergne. How are you finding the depth of competition in this series compared to your season in GP3 last year?
I think World Series is very competitive this year. I mean, a lot of people are saying it's on the same level, if not a bit higher than GP2, just because the amount of names and competitive teams in the championship. So, I mean, it's difficult. I mean, there's guys that are pushing very hard. There's four of us with F1 affiliation. And, you know, we're all pushing quite hard to win the championship this year. So, yeah, I mean, there's always a variety of guys that can be on top. So it makes you just push that much harder. And in qualifying, for example, perfect laps are required, because you'll find that the gaps are only a couple hundred from first to second.
Okay. Now, Ricciardo made his F1 debut at Silverstone and will be doing all the remaining races except one. Do you expect him to continue in the series now that he has a Formula One ride?
Red Bull did it in the past with Jaime Alguersuari, and they ran him in both. So I would expect Red Bull to keep him in the World Series this year. And with that being said, I mean, he's a constant threat in whatever car he's in at whatever track. So. We'll definitely still have to be on the top of our game to be ahead of him.
Okay, talking of F1, you were recently announced as part of Young Driver Program of Air Asia. Please tell us how this deal came about and what does this mean for your F1 aspirations?
Yes, this came about January of this year, and we were speaking a lot with Alex Young, who's in charge of the Team Lotus Air Asia Driver Development Program. And, you know, it's just basically a way for me to start to get involved with the Formula One team and, you know, just learn the insides and be able to meet the people and establish a relationship with the engineering staff and participate in some of the things that the race drivers do. And it's selected weekends I go to the track and, you know, sit in on all the debriefs and go to media briefings and whatnot. So it's definitely a learning role for me, preparing for next year and for the future.
Now, Mike Gascoigne's nickname is Pitbull. Do you find him to be very mean and aggressive, or is he a pretty cool guy once you get to know him?
No, he's a very cool guy. He tells things as they are. So a lot of people, you know, get put off by that. But at the end of the day, he knows what he's doing. He's very good at what he does, and all he wants to do is win. So you can't really complain about that.
Okay, I understand. Okay, racing is high emotions. Will you please tell our listeners of the experience you had last year, or maybe 2 years ago, when you were coaching a young Italian driver, I believe it was Matteo Divinia, and his dad had a change of teams down during the race weekend?
Yeah, that was impressive. I have never seen anything quite like that before. I mean, literally, his father and Mateo, they actually took the car and rolled it out of one garage and rolled it into another garage of another team and said that that team needed to set up the car. So it was definitely something new. But, you know, like everything in motorsports, I mean, things can get a bit political and a bit out of hand. So, you know, his father felt that was the best decision, and the performance drastically improved after that. So now at the end of the day, it could be looked at a good decision.
Interesting. In the last round in Hungary, you had two top five finishes, including a podium. Three rounds remain. Is winning the championship still doable and the plan, or you want to play conservative and at least get into the top two or three? What's the agenda?
Yeah, no, we're definitely still going for the championship. I mean, we closed the gap in Budapest, and there's six races left, and we get 25 points for a win, and we're 50 some odd points out. So, I mean, it's not at all unrealistic. We just have to keep the pace and keep a bit of good luck that we had in Budapest, and I think we'll be right back up there without any problems. We know that we're extremely quick in Paulo cards, so basically just a good weekend in Silverstone leading into Paulo cards. We'll definitely keep the momentum in our direction.
Now, I believe it was at the Nürburgring where you and Jean-Éric Wuyn got together on the opening lap and did not even complete one lap. Did you guys have a few choice words for each other once you got to that paddock area?
Not so much. I mean, I know Jean-Éric quite well, to be honest, and we have a good relationship off track. And it was simply a case of, you know, I asked him what happened, and it started raining quite hard in the third sector, and everyone was on slicks, and he was just simply a bit too ambitious for the grip available, and he had a lot of understeer and just was basically going off the track, and I was there. So, I mean, obviously, it's quite frustrating as I was running third at the time, and, you know, we were in a good position to at least be on the podium, and to get taken out like that was frustrating, obviously, but at the same time, I mean, in those conditions, it's quite easy for mistakes to happen.
Yeah. All right, you're driving for an English team. Are you still living in Italy while you were in Europe?
Yes, I'm living in Italy. However, this year I have not been there so much because, like you say, I've been driving for an English team, so there's a lot of work that has to be done in the UK. And on top of that, there's the FIA Institute workshops all over Europe every month, so that keeps me busy.
Yes. Okay, finally, misery loves company. You know, I was on my way to watch you race at Aragon, but unfortunately, access was denied by Ryanair. What made you declare Ryanair never again on your Facebook page?
Essentially, I was booking a ticket for a friend, and I was trying to call customer support from Malaysia, and they would not speak to me because I was not calling from a European country. And customer service literally hung up the phone on me. That was number one. And the second thing was I showed up to check in for my flight, and I checked in online, but I didn't have a printer set up in my house. So when I got there, they charged me 40 euros to print a boarding pass.
Yeah, it can get.
And I was, that was basically the straw that broke the camel's back.
Well, I promise you, F1 Weekly will never hang up on you.
Yes, thank you. I appreciate it.
Okay, man. Any message you may have for our listeners? You know, we've been following your career since you were in Formula BMW USA, and we have quite a few listeners who are very interested in seeing you succeed, and I'm sure there are many others in America and other places. Would you have a message for our listeners, please?
Just thank you very much for the continued support, and you know, we're pushing quite hard to be on the grid in F1 very soon, especially with USGP coming on next year. So, you know, just cross your fingers, and hopefully this year will turn out to be one that we're all very happy with.
Okay, Alexander, thank you so much, and please say hello to your mom and dad for me.
Yes, we'll do. Thanks, man.
Okay, thank you, sir. Bye-bye.
Alexander Rossi, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com. And now let's go right to the wrap-up. San Francisco Formula One group. They meet, they drink, and they have a great time during the Formula One season. Check them out at sff1.com. Cameron Karting is proud to organize and support the 2011 Redline Oil Karting Championship. Cameron Karting offers CRG karts, engines and parts for all karts, engine service, driver coaching, and trackside support to Northern California karters. For more information, contact CameronKarting.com. I want to mention our Facebook and Twitter sites. Just do a search for F1 Weekly and make us a friend or simply like us. If you'd like to advertise or cross-promote with our website or podcast, email me at info@F1Weekly.com. I want to thank everybody who listens to the program. Good night.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
This is Desiree for F1Weekly.com, thanking you, the subscribers and members of our listening audience, for listening to our podcast, reporting and commenting on Formula One, the highest echelon of motorsport, a blend of technology, tradition, glamour, and guts, all wrapped up in a high-speed package. That's F1Weekly.com for all your Formula One needs.